quote, meteorological reports paint a dire picture, warning that a tropical cyclone could hit coastal Kenya in the coming days. More than 150,000 people in Kenya and neighboring countries have been displaced by flooding caused by torrential rains. More than 155 people have been killed by flooding in neighboring Tanzania. Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 74 degrees and mostly cloudy. In New York City, 57 degrees and overcast. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Chris Spangert-Drowns. Thanks for listening.
Greetings, y bienvenidos a todo mi gente escuchando in Washington and all points beyond. This is Oscar Fernandez, and you're listening to Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington. El Distrito Colombia here on this Friday, May 3rd, 2024. You can also follow us on latinomediacollective.com. You can find us on Twitter under the name at @LMC_show. And of course, live on WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. Once again, this is Oscar Fernandez, and today on the show, we put the spotlight on Texas to examine how Governor Greg Abbott has responded to pro-Palestine protests on college campuses in the Lone Star State. Throughout the country, there has been an increase of pro-Palestine protests on college campuses as Israel's siege on Gaza continues. In the last few weeks, protests at Columbia University in New York, Emory University in Atlanta, and UCLA, just to name a few, have received national headlines for the heavy-handed response by police over the demonstrations. Last week at the University of Texas in Austin, school officials called in local and state police who violently crushed student groups' attempts to set up an encampment. Generally speaking, all these protests deserve our attention for their solidarity with the Palestinian people. Yet the protests in Texas under the governorship of Greg Abbott raises questions about freedom of speech, revisionist history, and heavy-handed police tactics that have taken place in Texas even before the recent rise of pro-Palestine protests nationwide. And since we're talking about Texas, who else do we have on the show but our favorite friend from Texas, Arturo Dominguez, who's a freelance writer based in Houston. Welcome back to the show, Arturo Dominguez.
Man, thanks for having me, Oscar. It's always a pleasure.
Absolutely, man. So just in the interest of full disclosure, we're recording this show on Wednesday, May 1st. And who knows what's going to happen between now and this coming Friday when this interview comes out. But as we have this conversation this week, students at Columbia University in New York occupied a campus building in defiance of both school authorities and local police. Things also got ugly at UCLA this week when pro-Palestine and pro-Israel supporters erupted in violence. In Texas, we have a clip about last week's demonstrations at the University of Texas in Austin from ABC affiliate KVUE. So let's take a listen. I know there's some interesting quotes here from Roland Gutierrez, who's a representative in the state of Texas, and we'll deep dive into his comments later on in the show. But let's take a listen at sort of how local media has summarized what's been taking place in Texas with these protests. Let's take a listen.
And UT Austin President Jay Hartzell responding to yesterday's protest, he sent out a statement saying, quote, our university held firm, enforcing our rules while protecting the constitutional right to free speech. Peaceful protests within our rules are acceptable. Breaking our rules and policies and disrupting others' ability to learn, not allowed. It goes on to say our rules matter and they will be enforced. Our university will not be occupied, end quote. And Governor Abbott releasing his own statement about the protests on social media yesterday, sharing a stern message to demonstrators. His post from yesterday afternoon says, quote, arrests are being made right now and will continue until the crowd disperses. These protesters belong in jail. Anti-Semitism will not be tolerated in Texas, period. Students joining in hate-filled anti-Semitic protests at any public college or university in Texas should be expelled, end quote. And of course, there were a lot of reactions to that and other lawmakers with their own responses, many denouncing the actions of Hartzell and law enforcement and the governor to the protest. One of those was Texas Senator Roland Gutierrez. In a statement, Senator Gutierrez saying DPS, quote, pulled out all the stops to harass innocent college students, but wouldn't lift a finger to help the victims in the Uvalde massacre. He goes on to say he's demanding DPS to be held accountable to their actions at the university. Just last month, Governor Greg Abbott issued an executive order mentioning the Palestine Solidarity Committee, which organized yesterday's protest at UT. He said the order was meant to, quote, fight the increase in acts of anti-Semitism at colleges and universities in Texas, end quote. The executive order told colleges to update free speech policies and to discipline groups such as the Palestine Solidarity Committee. Universities have to tell the governor's office what actions they took by late June.
So that was ABC affiliate KVUE sort of summarizing what took place last week at the University of Texas and the militarized response by Governor Greg Abbott to these protesters at the campus. And like I said before, there's some interesting comments there by Representative Roland Gutierrez from Texas. But before we get to that, we'll put the whole Uvalde thing to the side for a moment because that really needs a deeper examination. So Arturo, give us your general thoughts on what's going on nationwide and your particular thoughts on Governor Abbott's response to the protesters both last week and this week.
Well, nationwide, obviously, there's a heavy-handed approach. You know, Tuesday night, NYPD infiltrated Columbia University. I say infiltrated, but they essentially, it was an aggressive infiltration. I can't use any other word because that's what it is. And, you know, then Wednesday, Mayor Adams justified essentially police brutality because the nation's youth are being brainwashed or something like that. He said that they're being manipulated and there's this, he's not going to stand by and watch it happen. He essentially designated himself anti-propagandist, I guess. It's a strange thing, especially, and I know we want to push Uvalde to the side, but it's hard for Texans to look at state troopers on campus beating up unarmed students when they wouldn't even face one armed, technically, student. I mean, just graduated, but they stood around for an hour. They would listen to people, children and teachers get killed. And then for Texans to see the amount of troopers on campus, the batons, just the aggression. I mean, there's just outright police brutality. And we have to be mindful of the fact that these protests, like in the summer of 2020, were peaceful until the police showed up. It wasn't until decisions were made to send in police to essentially aggravate the situation. We don't want these kids here. We don't want to hear what they have to say. Send in the cops. And then cops start coming in aggressive because they know they're not up against anything. They're unarmed students. So there's a situation here where you have kids that are paying tons of money in tuition that grants them access to a campus. Campuses have areas for protest.
Yeah.
This is part of our nation's history, protests on campus. So the tactic is suspend the student, then charge them with trespassing. And I know that the DA in Travis County doesn't want to bring charges on a lot of the first round of people that were arrested. I'm not clear on the rest of them since then, but on the first arrest, I believe it was something like 70. She said she wasn't going to bring charges against them or pursue charges against them. But we still have to contend with the heavy-handed approach from governors, from mayors, from school administrators. You know, it's a weird thing to see on cable news or whatever, hearing that college administrators called the cops on students. And especially when you look at it from a perspective of police are enforcers there to protect property over people. It becomes more and more obvious. Again, you look at Uvalde, they weren't protecting people. But then you look at UT and they come out in mass to protect a few broken windows. And this whole idea that a few broken windows undermines the message of an actual genocide that's occurring, that tens of thousands of people are being mass murdered by indiscriminate bombing. To suggest that breaking a window undermines that message is, I hate to say it, but it's white supremacy, right? So you look at the civil rights movements and things like that back in the day, you had a few people that probably broke some windows or something. And we've been hearing this our whole lives. The minute you break windows, the minute you destroy some property or something like that, that's it. Nobody wants to be on your side. That's it. Nobody's listening to the message. And honestly, if people are worried about broken windows, they weren't listening to the message to begin with. There's rumors starting to circulate, and I'm starting to see it on Telegram and stuff, of some far-right agitators getting involved in these protests, much like the summer of 2020 during the Black Lives Matter protests. And the students are currently being blamed for everything, right? Obviously, just like Black Lives Matter was. And I'm fairly confident that we'll find out later, just like we did in the summer of 2020, we'll find out later that the people causing the damage and doing the damage are probably not students. And if they are students, they're far right. Like, we've already seen some pro-Israel groups invade the pro-Palestine protests, start fights, start damaging things, and some were caught and some haven't been. So this is one of those situations where it's constantly evolving and it's hard to really determine what is fact from fiction. But I'm fairly confident that we're going to find out later that you're going to see some outside agitator involvement that's trying to make the movement look bad.
And you wrote a whole article about it in your recent Substack article, which we'll mention towards the end of the show, because it is a crucial frame of reference that we need to point out at a certain point during the conversation. You know, I was going to put Uvalde on the side, but since you just brought it up, it occurred to me, since you're in Texas, that, you know, the whole sting of Uvalde almost 2 years later still runs very deep for residents in Texas. We sort of explains Texas Representative Roland Gutierrez's comments that he made, which was an interesting parallel between the heavy-handed approach by the Department of Public Safety, or DPS, at the University of Texas with what he sees as a weak response to the school shooting in Uvalde in 2022, which you just mentioned. And according to the HuffPost, even students at UT chanted, "Who failed Uvalde? DPS," when DPS arrived to arrest them. So I wonder if you could expand a little bit more about this little parallel that Representative Gutierrez made, because what the students said there, I mean, we could pontificate, but that's the ultimate mic drop on authority to point that out as soon as they showed up. The fact that students recognize DPS when they showed up gives you an idea how bad their reputation is in Texas as well, correct?
Yeah, and DPS has a big presence in Austin. It's the state capital. So you have the governor's mansion. You have everything there, then it's all protected by DPS. So DPS has a major presence in the city of Austin, right around campus at the University of Texas. So it's not unheard of for students to say things like that to DPS, but to hear it in mass, I thought there's a lot of people in Texas that are thinking this.
Yeah.
And you hear them say it, like, even as listeners probably know, I have Trumper neighbors, and even Trumper neighbors are not necessarily appalled by this, but they are aware of the contrast in responses. And it's a weird thing to see just in general, because there was like 400 cops at Uvalde, and there's thousands at UT, and there was one shooter in Uvalde and a couple of hundred unarmed students at UT. And it's just this militarized, heavy-handed, pepper spray, batons, just beating up kids. It says a lot about policing in general, because it's not just a Texas issue, obviously. This is something that in the summer of 2020, a lot of people brought to our attention, right? Like, we were all aware that cops aren't there to protect people. Cops don't stop murder. They don't stop robbery. They don't stop any of those things. And we all know that the percentage of solved crimes in this country are all single digits. And the amount of money that we give to police is crazy. More than half of city budgets go to cops. You know, when you need resources for homeless people, for poor people, for things like that. And study after study shows that you abolish poverty, you abolish most crime, but instead of putting money into that, they'd rather put it into militarized police to go beat up unarmed students on campus. So we're back to the same cycle of discussion and little action. So a lot of people, because of the summer of 2020, a lot of people elected Joe Biden. There was the whole defund the police movement and all that. And when Joe Biden took office, he gave police $35 billion more dollars with COVID money. Unheard of amounts of money to go to local law enforcement from the federal government. But he did it. And there were no accountability measures put into place. So here we are, 2024. You got peaceful protests happening. You have an even more militarized police than we had in 2020, than we had during Uvalde two years ago. And again, nothing is changing as far as solving crime. Our history, we've constantly given cops tons of money, and crime never, it doesn't affect crime, doesn't impact crime. When police went on strike in New York City a few years ago, crime actually went down. So there's a lot of different points to measure off of that you can say that giving cops more money doesn't help any situation. And especially when you look at what's going on college campuses, why is there militarized police there? Why are they in riot gear? They said it at UT. Why are you in riot gear? There is no riot here. And they chanted that over and over and over again, right in cops' faces. And again, college kids with sloganeering, making valid points with just a few simple words. And that's it. You know, you give them a ton of money, and then they have to justify that money. So they have to use that equipment. So they employ it wherever they can. And I think that's what we're witnessing a lot of, aside from the fact that we live in a very right-wing type of police in Texas.
In addition to looking at the state with regards to state-sanctioned violence through the police, we also have to hold, you know, school officials accountable.
Sure.
With regards to this over-escalation of policing. So, for example, one of the things that really got under my skin, and I think it was from the Texas Tribune, actually, where it was pointed out that it was UT officials who played a role in calling the police for fear of similar pro-Palestinian demonstrations happening in other parts of the country. I mean, like I said before, Columbia University and UCLA and Emory University in Atlanta, they're all getting the headlines for the right reasons with regards to student solidarity with Gaza, and also pointing out the unnecessary police violence that we've seen in these demonstrations. But it really gets under my skin, the presumption that the same thing would happen at the University of Texas because it happened somewhere else. I mean, here in Washington, we've had some demonstrations in several universities here, and there have been a few arrests here and there, but nothing to the same extent as what we've seen in Los Angeles or in New York or in Atlanta or with what we're discussing here in Texas. it's more of a projection of their own reactionary politics than it is whatever aggression that they perceive students are having when they do these demonstrations. So, yeah, I just want to point that out there because a lot of media outlets, especially those in Texas, quickly called out Governor Abbott on his hypocrisy, especially when his office signed and bragged about Senate Bill 18 in 2019, which supposedly enshrined free speech protections on college campuses. But that didn't stop Abbott from deploying the Department of Public Safety to help crack down on separate protests at the University of Texas last week. This happened despite the fact, and again, this is from the Texas Tribune, that last week's protest showed no signs of violence before police got involved. In fact, it was the police who interrupted the students' march within an hour, forming a barricade at the front of the crowd with their bikes. The officers also used loudspeakers to warn students to disperse or face criminal trespassing charges, which, again, raises the question, who's the real belligerent in this scenario here? So I have a question for you, but it's hard to formalize here, but where do we begin with Abbott's hypocrisy over free speech here?
Well, his version of free speech is basically the same as the Proud Boys and everybody else. When he was trying to get legislation passed for quote-unquote free speech on campus, it's because he was protecting far-right bigots, racists, things like, you know. And especially, you know, he did it right before all the Black Lives Matter protests and everything like that. So it's an issue of hypocrisy for sure. But to them, to the current conservative movement, Republican Party, the only free speech is their speech. They want free speech for anything they have to say, no matter how bigoted, no matter how racist, no matter how divisive it may be. But if they hear something they don't want to hear, then they want to silence it. So in this country, unfortunately, neo-Nazis and their anti-Semitic behavior is protected free speech, right? So I can't remember how long ago, decades ago, the ACLU filed a lawsuit to protect neo-Nazis from having their speech silenced. And in this country, we've all been told, when we hear neo-Nazis and we hear the nasty stuff they have to say and the disgusting and violent nature of what they have to say, we've all been told that in order for free speech to function, we have to deal with it, right? We have to accept that they're saying it. We don't have to believe it, but they're allowed to say it. If a neo-Nazi can go around spouting actual anti-Semitism, according to the Supreme Court, right, then why can't anybody call out a genocide? Why can't people speak out against a genocide? There's a current movement right now in Congress, in conservative-led states, to sort of redefine what anti-Semitism is. Whatever. Redefine it. You know, at the end of the day, it's still free speech. Unfortunately, it's still free speech. You can't say that calling out the Israeli government is anti-Semitic, right? Because, like, I don't support every government in the world has its own flaws. You can't blindly support any government. If somebody's trying to convince you to blindly support Russia or blindly support the United States or Cuba or whatever, there's an agenda there, right? That's what we call an op, right? So I don't trust anybody who tries to convince me that any government is infallible, because they're not. So why is Israel above criticism in that context, right? What they're doing is abhorrent. What we did in Iraq and Afghanistan, all those things were abhorrent. Vietnam, all of it, terrible, terrible policy. We're watching millions of people die using our taxpayer dollars. It's our money. They're doing this in our name. So we should have a right to speak out against it. To suddenly declare that speaking out against what your government is doing is anti-Semitic is white supremacy, right? So, okay, so I said this on Twitter. Accusing people calling out genocide of anti-Semitism is the same thing as accusing people of calling out racism of being anti-white. You know how many times I've been called anti-white just for calling out racist systems, racist institutions, because the person that read what I wrote felt like I was targeting them individually. It's never that. I'm married to a white woman, right? Like, what the hell? Like, it's not about anti-whiteness. It's about calling out racism. So if somebody says that they're anti-Zionist or anti-genocide or whatever, that doesn't make them anti-Semitic. If they sit here, if you listen to Republicans like Marjorie Taylor Greene, right? She supports Israel on one hand, but at the same time, she peddles anti-Semitic conspiracy theories that when she says NGOs are paying NGOs to pay migrants to come here, she's talking about a conspiracy theory about Jews paying migrants to come here because supposedly Jews are behind white extinction, right? The racist conspiracy, great replacement conspiracy theory. That's all based on an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory that Jews are behind the browning of America.
And yet at the same time, she would be precisely the type of person who would be supporting all these actions that Greg Abbott has been doing recently in Texas with regards to pro-Palestine protest.
Right. And, you know, somebody like Marjorie Taylor Greene, right? She doesn't necessarily outright support Israel, right? She was against the Clean Bill for funding their genocide, all that, right? But for all the wrong reasons.
There's no intelligence.
Right. There's no logic, right? But somebody like her is the perfect example of how a lot of far-right racists like Nick Fuentes just proved to the world that they hate Muslims more than they hate Jews. A guy like Nick Fuentes, I watched a podcast of his where he was battling this after October 7th, and he's battling with himself. Who should we support? And his audience, he's talking to his audience. Who should we support? Should we support the Palestinians or should we support Israel? And to him, if you support Israel, then you're going to have massive amount of Palestinian refugees coming to America. And to him, having Jews control, quote unquote, Jews control America, having Jews control America is not as bad as having a massive influx of Palestinian refugees. So while he doesn't outright support Israel, right? He proudly says he supports Adolf Hitler. He peddles in a lot of neo-Nazi stuff, but he hates Arabs more. And that's what it boils down to with somebody like Marjorie Taylor Greene, with somebody like Greg Abbott. Like, Greg Abbott is different, I guess. I shouldn't put him in there with Marjorie Taylor Greene because Greg Abbott is 100% blind Israel supporter. As a government contractor, one reason we didn't do a lot of work in Texas was because they make us pledge that we would never boycott Israel.
Oh, and by the way, late last year, he actually made a trip to Israel, Governor Greg Abbott, right?
Right, yeah, he did. So he's one of those evangelicals, right? They support Israel in a sense that because of their prophecy, you know, when Jesus comes back, whatever, all the Jews are supposed to die, right? So I don't know, to me, that seems pretty anti-Semitic to say, you know, you're trying to do this because you want Jews to ultimately is essentially, and it's a weird conundrum to me because I don't believe in any of that stuff. It's all politics, it's all governments, it's all war, it's all death, it's colonization. That's what we're talking about.
Yes, that's right. And just so you know, just last week we did a show on Israel's involvement on the Mayan genocide in Guatemala back in the 1980s to serve as a crucial frame of reference for people to understand that what's taking place in Gaza right now and all the war crimes that are being committed as we speak don't happen in a vacuum. And such interventions like the one that I mentioned last week with regards to Guatemala is not exclusive to Central America. It's not exclusive to Latin America. That this shows that Israel has had involvements before in these sort of crimes. And at no point in time with my guest last week did we really mention religion all that much, other than to point out that Zionism has been, in a lot of cases, especially with countries like Guatemala, has been an extension or another expression of racism or white supremacy. And this sort of projects what we've seen from Greg Abbott, what we've seen from numerous officials in the state of Texas, but also understand that it's not exclusive to the state of Texas, because we've seen it in New York, in L.A., in Atlanta, and all these other campuses. So we're going to take a break right here. We're speaking with Arturo Dominguez, who's a freelance writer based in Houston. This is the Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington. We're going to take a quick break right here. Back with more in a minute. Stay tuned.
على ديني على أرض تلاقيني أنا لأهلي أنا فديهم أنا دمي فلسطيني 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 أنا دمي فلسطيني
Muhammad Asaf, and you're listening to Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington. Reminding everyone, you can follow us on latinomediacollective.com. You can follow us on Twitter under the name at @LMC_show. And of course, live on WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. Once again, this is Oscar Fernandez, and we're speaking about Texas Governor Greg Abbott and his battle with free speech and pro-Palestine protesters in the Lone Star State with Arturo Dominguez, who's a freelance writer based in Houston, Texas. So as things continue to develop, Arturo, not only in Texas but in other parts of the country, Gutierrez's comments as it pertains to Gaza and Uvalde also highlight what MSNBC, Axios, the LA Times, and other outlets have mentioned in recent weeks, which is an increase in Latino solidarity with the Palestinian community as what's taking place in Gaza continues to unfold. So just last week, as an example, as I mentioned, I did a show on Israel's involvement in the Mayan genocide in Guatemala in the 80s. And I gotta stress it again, it's an underreported frame of reference, which also explains why the Global South has demonstrated support for Gaza. So I want to get your thoughts on the development of this sort of common ground between students of color and Gaza, because with the Uvalde comparison, it sort of hits differently in Texas, probably in any other part of the country, with regards to black and brown students finding common ground with what's taking place in Gaza, because DPS is something that's unique to Texas and sort of also explains the hostility between the police and with people of color in Texas.
Yeah, so, you know, Latino support for Palestine, to me, was kind of a no-brainer. I saw it a while back when you started seeing in October and November and December, you started seeing a lot of Latin American leaders. I believe Cuba was the first.
Oh, yeah, Colombia as well.
Colombia. A lot of Latin American leaders came out in support of Palestine. A lot of Latin American countries currently have cases in the International Criminal Court against Israel. So you kind of saw it coming. With regards to the Black community, which I'm surrounded by, it's the same thing. You're talking about oppressed people. The indigenous community, by and large, few exceptions here and there, all of our communities support that because we are an oppressed group. I often use Cuba as an example. The amount of food that goes in and out is controlled by the United States. When I hear stories of Israel only allows enough food into Palestine for people to survive, like the minimum caloric intake, right? Minimum amount of calories to survive.
Yeah.
I see that in Cuba. The United States, everybody says, oh, the United States sends all this chicken to Cuba every month. That amounts to about 5 pounds per person per month. Good luck surviving on that, 5 pounds of chicken in a month. So the control is there. So, you know, you use Cuba, use Haiti as another example. Haiti has been occupied its whole existence, and they are still paying for being the first country to beat out their enslavers and abolish slavery. And they're still paying for that. The United States is part of it. I think I've mentioned this on this show before, where Bill Clinton apologized for his role in controlling the rice that's grown in Haiti. And instead of allowing them to grow their own rice, they force them to import it, and that exerts control. And he apologized for that because regardless of him apologizing for it or not, the United States still controls what goes in and out of Haiti. And what goes out of Haiti, the United States puts in its pocket. What goes into Haiti is just enough food to survive. The United States does to Cuba, to Haiti, to Nicaragua, to every country in this hemisphere what Israel is doing to Palestine. So to see Latinos come out and support by a majority of Latinos, because obviously there's some, probably the same that support Trump, who support Israel. But to see so many Latinos come out, it shouldn't come as that big of a surprise, just because in general, Latinos represent the colonized people. If you wanted to take every Latin American country like they do in the U.S. and lump us into one group as Latinos, then yeah, we're by and large a colonized people. So we know from our history, in my case, I know from what my parents went, I know from what my grandmother lived through before she came here to spend her last days with us and her great grandkids, it's suffering at the hands of another nation. So at the end of the day, I think a lot of Latinos probably see it as I do, where when you hear Joe Biden say, I'm not Jewish, but I'm a Zionist, right? I'm not saying Joe Biden is a white supremacist, but that's how white supremacists hide behind Zionism. So there's a lot of talk about the current Jewish population in Israel, how they're mostly European, okay? And they probably do have genealogical ties to the land. Not disputing that. I'm not arguing that. But when you have people like Mayorkas, for example, right? His whole family history is in Europe. They ended up in Cuba after World War II, things like that. How is he Israeli, right? How is Blinken Israeli? I don't know Blinken's history, but why are these people in our government that have a dual citizenship? You see what I'm saying? Like, you know, you talk about Donald Trump being a little puppet of Russia or whatever, but he's not a dual citizen from Russia, right? If he were, I believe that would be an issue, would it not? So if I had dual citizenship, Cuba and here, and I run for president, you think I'd win? No, I wouldn't. People would hold that against me.
Yeah, it's, now that you describe it that way, it's like an unforced fealty.
Right.
If you think about it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I can't explain it any other way.
It's hard to put into words, right?
Either way, it's absurd.
Right,
and
right.
It certainly doesn't help at all in any way, shape, or form with stopping what's taking place
in Gaza
right now.
Right.
So allow me to turn our attention to sort of the power that Governor Greg Abbott has in Texas, because when Columbia University in New York decided to take action against protesters on campus, initial reports did not mention either New York Governor Kathy Hochul or New York Mayor Eric Adams. we're not fans of Eric Adams at all whatsoever, mm-hmm. but he wasn't really mentioned when the protests at Columbia University initially started. But when protesters were arrested at UT, Governor Abbott had a direct role in sending police to make arrests. In fact, I've had you on the show so many times that as soon as they started arresting protesters at UT, I thought to myself, yeah, Greg Abbott's behind that, which sort of shows you how much power he has and how he's sort of the judge and jury with regards to Texas law. And so to what degree can we point to HB 2127, the so-called Death Star bill that we spoke about actually last year that undermines the state's bluer urban areas to enact progressive policies, to Abbott's recent actions and statements against protesters? Because again, it's almost like he's the judge and jury of this whole thing with regards to Texas. I didn't think of Kathy Hochul or Eric Adams when protesters were being harassed by police. But in Texas, it's like he's the judge and jury. There's no other way to describe it.
It's all in how he exerts his power, his executive authority. He borderline abuses it. When you look at the immigration policies, for example, he borderline abuses it. But when you talk about House Bill 2127, the Death Star bill, it does. It takes away a local municipality's rights to enact basically any ordinance. It gives everybody the authority to sue a city and use that law as a weapon. So 2127 came about when there was a movement in northern parts of Texas to ban fracking because of the earthquakes that were occurring in Oklahoma. Some of them were starting to bleed over the border between Oklahoma and Texas. So
yes. And so the initial idea behind 2127 was for business interests, not necessarily with regards to freedom of speech. And that's sort of therein lies the issue with this Death Star bill, the ambiguity behind it, that we don't even know how far Governor Abbott's power or reach goes to. It extends because of its ambiguity.
Right. And when we talk about Abbott abusing his authority, he employed the Texas Education Agency, for example, to overthrow the elected Houston Independent School District Board. And they installed,
that's right,
they installed their own people. And since then, the school district has had nothing but issues. Teachers were having problems. They were promised salaries they're not getting. Libraries were converted to in-school detention facilities. There's a lot of things. And then you have Abbott's anti-critical race theory agenda, which,
yeah,
again, I can't say this enough, but critical race theory is not taught in public school. This is a higher level legal theory that's taught in law school. Critical race theory examines how the laws are used against non-white people, about how the 13th Amendment is weaponized against black people, how slavery is still legal based on the 13th Amendment. All you have to do is convict somebody.
And it's another component to the hypocrisy with regards to his views on freedom of speech, because right about this time last year, he was all on the anti-CRT bandwagon and passed legislation to make things even less politically correct in his views. But as soon as there's protests that offends him politically, then all that goes out the window altogether. So, oh man, there's just, it's just hypocrisy on top of hypocrisy on top of hypocrisy. And that sort of leads us now to one of your recent articles on your Substack page. And I wonder if you could clarify this for us, because you have a recent article about the increase of anti-Palestine content in social media. You follow hate speech and all these other hate groups on social media to see where they're going and monitor them as best as you can. So you even mentioned the infamous COINTELPRO program, which was a covert FBI program that worked to discredit political groups and individuals during the civil rights era in the 1960s and 70s. A lot of people in the WPFW audience is familiar with this, but could you explain the argument in your recent article as protests across the country continue to develop? Where's the connection here in this article?
Well, you see, one, you know, we talked about outside agitators earlier, and that's part of it. There could be, easily could be some feds in there, you know. And to be clear, when these MAGA people talk about the feds were behind January 6th, they weren't. Obviously, they weren't. But were there feds within the Proud Boys, within the Oath Keepers, within the movements? Probably. Right? So we know COINTELPRO was used against the Klan, and that's the only white supremacist group they went after, right? But it was used against every single civil rights movement, right? So they used the Klan as sort of like, look, we're going after them too, right? But it was used against United Farm Workers. It was used against Black Panthers. It was used, I mean, across the board, the Puerto Rican Liberation Movement, all that. And the point is to sow chaos, fear, paranoia, and distrust. So in my article, I talked specifically about Jackson Hinkle, right? This guy's quote unquote MAGA communist. Sorry, that's an oxymoron. It doesn't make any sense, right? MAGA's fascism and communism are not the same, despite what people might try to convince you of. And he's building a whole movement. There's a lot of people that are like MAGA communists, which, again, doesn't make any
supposedly
sense. Right. But here's a guy who, and we're talking about, earlier I talked about how a lot of people on the far right took sides with Israel. Some of them took sides with Palestine because they're more anti-Semitic than they are Islamophobic. To me, that's Jackson Hinkle.
Yeah, that's sort of...
That's Hinkle, right?
Confusing, but once you take the time to like untangle that web, it does kind of make sense, which is why we're going to create a link to your article, but please continue.
So Hinkle last week tried to get in at Emory University, where Norman Finkelstein was supposed to speak. A lot of other people were speaking, and it was supposed to be really positive. And he has a buddy of his, Haas, I think that's how you say it. Anyway, they wouldn't let Jackson Hinkle in because he has a very, very problematic history, anti-Black. He blamed Black Lives Matter, still to this day says committed quote-unquote acts of terror, when we all know, and it's been proven, that it was right-wing, far-right hate groups and stuff that did all the damage back then. But they wouldn't let Hinkle in because of his history. So his buddy Haas gets in there, gets on stage, and immediately starts getting booed. And a lot of people, even me, called them out for some of the stuff they said. And whether it was anti-Semitic or not, I'll concede that that's questionable, may or may not. It's borderline for me. To me, it felt like it was. And the reason why it feels like anti-Semitism to me is because of their history of anti-Semitism. See what I'm saying? So they may be using softer language now because they're pro-Palestine and because they have 2 million followers and they're making a ton of money. But their history tells me that despite the softer language, it's still anti-Semitism because of who it's coming from and the logic they're using to arrive at that point. So I don't think that they are pro-Palestinian in any way, shape, or form. This is a money grab for people like Hinkle and Haas and stuff. This is grifters, 100%. Now, I don't dig in on Hinkle as much because there are a lot of Palestinians that support what he's doing because of his platform, because he's getting attention on the issue. And I understand that. I just try to warn people that be careful who you associate with. If you want to follow him off a cliff, follow him off a cliff. Just be informed about who you're following. And that's what I feel like my job is here. I'm not trying to say ban him, don't listen to him, whatever. I'm just saying be careful with who you're associating with. And a lot of what I pointed out in my article, what I've been pointing out on Twitter, was his anti-Blackness. And then my association with COINTELPRO here is his rhetoric is steadily escalating, gradually, and it's subtle, but it's violent. He posts pictures of himself, hey, I'm going to go speak here, and he's holding a gun, talking about revolution and this and that.
That's not subtle.
That part isn't. But his rhetoric to violence is subtle. Holding the gun, to me, reeked of COINTELPRO. And what I tell people all the time is, if you're in any movement and somebody tries to convince you to do shady stuff, they're probably a fit. If they're putting ideas in your head that you didn't have before, to commit violence, to do things like Hinkle is doing by holding up guns, that to me is an op. Hinkle has white privilege. He can sit on Twitter and hold a gun. But if a brown person, God forbid if it was a Palestinian, said, hey, I'm going to go speak at Emory College and holds a gun, he'd be arrested before the tweet publishes. You know what I'm saying? Before the first person hits the little heart button on Twitter, he'd probably be in jail.
Yeah, when I saw that, I'm like, that picture is still on Twitter, right?
Yeah, right. And a lot of like, and I know like after October 7th, he was catching a lot of heat for his anti-Semitism. So he cleaned up his Twitter, deleted a lot of anti-Semitic stuff, anti-Black stuff, but there's some still there. Like I showed some in the article. I've shared it on Twitter. Like he tried to clean it up, but he did a poor job of doing it. So if you look at his history, it's beyond problematic. And there are a lot of people like him that are in the pro-Palestinian movement. And that bothers me in a COINTELPRO sense.
Yeah. And if anything people should take from your article is that we shouldn't talk about COINTELPRO in the past tense.
Right.
It's still something that could be and still is practiced in one way, shape, or form all these years later. And because you exclusively follow these hate groups and all these sort of actions by right-wing organizations in shady situations like these, this is precisely why we have you on the show to not only give us your insight, but to warn people as well as these protests continue to develop. Because by and large, let's make it very clear before we wrap things up here that by and large, most of the people that are protesting are fighting the good fight in an honest and sincere way. We just got to be on the lookout for those people that Arturo just mentioned. So with that said, we've been speaking with Arturo Dominguez, who's a freelance writer based in Houston, Texas. Arturo, as always, it's a fantastic conversation. Thank you very much for being on the show with us today.
Man, thanks for having me. It's always, always a blast.
Absolutely. And with that said, that is it for today's show. We want to remind everyone you can follow us on latinomediacollective.com. You can follow us on Twitter under the name at @LMC_show. And of course, live on WPFWFM.org. Once again, this is Oscar Fernandez saying thank you very much, everyone, for listening to the show. That's it for today's show. Adios. Nos vemos. Ciao.
The DC Music Census is now live. Led by the DC Commission on the Arts and Humanities, the DC Music Census is an initiative that collects data from music industry professionals about the DMV's music economy, allowing the district to make informed decisions in supporting the music ecosystem. The census is anonymous and designed for anyone working within the music industry. Members of the music community may take the census by visiting dcmusiccensus.org. That's dcmusiccensus.org. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns with some brief news headlines. Former President Trump's hush money trial is continuing today. Douglas Doss, a forensic analyst in the district attorney's office, returned to the stand. Yesterday, Doss described a recording retrieved from one of Michael Cohen's cell phones that was played for the jury, in which Trump and his former lawyer discussed a hush money payment to Karen McDougal. Today, Doss testified that there was no indication the call was tampered with. Yesterday, the jury also heard testimony from the attorney who represented Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal. Keith Davidson testified to negotiating the payments McDougal and Daniels received in exchange for selling their stories to the National Enquirer. Trump is charged with 34 felony counts of falsifying business records as part of a scheme to bury stories that he feared could hurt his 2016 presidential campaign. Turkey has halted all import and export transactions with Israel in protest over the war in Gaza. Turkey's trade ministry announced the development yesterday in a statement, saying exports and imports with Israel will be halted until, quote, Israel declares an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and allows a sufficient and uninterrupted flow of humanitarian aid. Turkey already last month imposed trade restrictions on Israel over what it said was Israel's refusal to allow Turkey to take part in aid airdrop operations for Gaza and its offensive on the enclave. Trade between Israel and Turkey was worth almost $7 billion last year. Police in New York City this morning moved to clear two protest encampments, arresting 43 protesters at the New School and arresting another 13 at NYU. The Associated Press reports that nearly 2,200 college protesters have been arrested in recent weeks. Earlier this week, 100 protesters were arrested at Columbia University. The NYPD said yesterday that one cop accidentally fired his gun inside a Columbia academic building while protesters were being arrested. The statement said the cop had been attempting to use a flashlight attached to his gun, but instead shot a single round that hit a wall. President Biden made his first public statement yesterday in relation to the campus protests, attempting to show support for the spirit of protest while denouncing what he described as violent protest.
As president, I will always defend free speech, and I will always be just as strong in standing up for the rule of law. That's my responsibility to you, the American people, my obligation to the Constitution.
In related news, a GOP-led House committee is planning to hold a hearing next week scrutinizing local D.C. officials for not clearing a pro-Palestinian encampment at George Washington University. The plan is part of a larger effort by House Republicans to crack down on the demonstrations erupting at college campuses across the country. The hearing, first reported by the GW Hatchet, will be held next Wednesday. Mayor Muriel Bowser and MPD Chief Pamela Smith are invited to testify. Meanwhile, several GW students have been suspended, while no protesters have yet been arrested. More than 100 GW faculty members have signed a statement asking the university to rescind the suspensions and to meet with student protesters about their demands. And the death toll from flooding in Kenya has surpassed 200, and President William Ruto has postponed next week's planned reopening of schools. Ruto warned in a public speech that, quote, meteorological reports paint a dire picture, warning that a tropical cyclone could hit coastal Kenya in the coming days. More than 150,000 people in Kenya and neighboring countries have been displaced by flooding caused by torrential rains. More than 155 people have been killed by flooding in neighboring Tanzania. Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 74 degrees and mostly cloudy. In New York City, 57 degrees and overcast. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns. Thanks for listening.